we can read the report to ourselves. We have one item on the agenda. The Human Rights Watch study outcome, or shall I say findings. And we would have loved that they present the report themselves. We're giving them an opportunity to explain what they've done, the methodologies they use, and the impact of those methodologies in the findings, and how we can take the process forward. Normally, if somebody is late, they send a message to indicate why they are late. It's 10 past 10 now. And I don't want to be over enthusiastic in not waiting and be under enthusiastic in servicing the members of the committee. Can I put the pretty government we have to the committee so that we can decide how to respond to this situation? Honorable Dapan.
Thank you, Honorable Chairman. I think we must proceed. I suggest that we must proceed with the report. If there is anything we would love to hear from them, then we put that aside to save time. I'm just sitting here doing nothing, and there's no way to tell them how far are they. So I suggest that we must proceed with the report because it's part of us. And we debate on it.
Yes, there's a proposal that we go ahead and go through the report and debate on it and see how we go before they come, instead of waiting. Ms. Mazur.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm concerned that if we go ahead and start analyzing the report without their presence, we'll end up having to repeat the process when they arrive. Because I'm sure we all have questions and we have things that we'd like to ask. And as you said earlier, we've had the opportunity to read the report. So I would prefer that we wait for the opportunity for them to present so that we don't end up just informing ourselves through repeated debates when we can't actually execute after how Human Rights Watch themselves. I know it's inconvenient, but I don't think it would be fruitful for us to go into this report without having them present to respond to.
Thank you, Chair. I would like to second that, which has been spoken by Uma Matibu. We were anticipating for the presentation to be presented to ourselves as a committee, and it would be a fruitless exercise to delving into the report that wasn't we are not the authors of. We would rather wait for the author to present it themselves so that we can be able to interact with the report and the document once it's been presented to our chair. So I think we can wait a while longer and then attend the meeting if they don't pitch up, so that we go on and do our other responsibilities as members of parliament. Thank you.
Chairperson, I agree with the previous speakers. I also think that we basically need to deal with this report with other reports that we received in the past. I think, you know, as a committee, we haven't really dealt with even on oversight on farm worker issues. If they don't come to this portfolio, can't we just then just maybe put in our program or plan how are we going to deal in general with issues or conditions of farm workers? Because I think it's one of the things that as a portfolio we haven't really dealt with in the past, and maybe prioritised, we haven't visited the West Cape, but maybe prioritise this as an issue when we go on oversight next time. I'm trying to get onto a step forward, because we can't sit here and discuss something that we're actually not going to debate. I agree that we can't really discuss the report for clarity on questions that we wanted to ask from the writers of the report.
I wonder if the members have been able to go through just the that report. Because if members have been able just to pay, my question was going to be, what's new in that report? About what is going on in the farms? What's new? And so far as I'm concerned, there's nothing new. I don't even know why we keep it hidden. Because there's nothing new in that particular report. Maybe the point that, because already that report is in the media, people have introduced their own report. We're not sure even who commissioned them, or were they commissioned by the committee, and so on. So those are the questions which I would love to know in terms of coming up with that particular report. Who's behind that particular report? That's my interest. But I don't see anything new. To me, then, those issues are the issues we know. What is the key is, what is the strategy for the committee to consider the issues which are even in a number of other reports which were raising the same issue? Because there's nothing new, except that there's a sensation in the media as if all of a sudden something new has been discovered. Something which has long been with us. We know it when we visit these farms and so on. But the issue is maybe the committee needs to apply its mind. And that's why I wanted to agree with you, Chairperson, when you're saying the report is self-explanatory. We can read it on our own. Why would we want those people to come and present something which we know? All we have to do is, what is the strategy of dealing with the issues which are repeated and they've long been raised, those issues? The brutalities in the farm have long been raised. In fact, in one of the inputs which I think I made in the SDOP, you remember we're putting a mediation farm committee done through Chisel, Hastings and Thompson, which has been dealing with all these issues of the brutality. And we were saying the success rate of that thing in terms of mediation was about 80% to deal with all those issues which have been raised. So insofar as I'm concerned, there's nothing new in that. As much as there's a lot of media hype about it, there's nothing new. It's the issues which we know already. To me, then, it would be to define a strategy and a process on how to deal with the issues and say to the department, what have you been doing with that? They must present it for. And then you are able to say, we are satisfied, we're not satisfied with how you're dealing with this particular matter. So the department must just present a report to the committee.
Honourable members, I'm listening. We had a whole day presentation by NGOs, AgriSA, Transvaal, Agriculture, INI, and excuse me. What is EAU? I said believe. not enough for us to note that there are similarities between those presentations and the findings in this report. Remember when we, South Africans are very funny people. When we are alone talking to each other, we treat each other as if we are on opposing camps on this matter. At the end of the day, we end up doing nothing about the matter precisely because we think there's always a motive on the part of those that are talking about this matter. We concluded that meeting of the stakeholders with an agreement, explicit agreement, that FAUD, the Food and Allied Workers Union, will work with the committee to bring forward all issues affecting the farm workers and farm dwellers so that we can work together to resolve them, so that we push the department to respond to those issues. One. Number two, we ask the NGOs to do further investigations so that the relevant authorities, this facility that is there in the department, that deals with two things. The facility deals with land tenure questions. It deals with farm evictions and abuse of the conditions of the farm dwellers. We agreed also further that the legal fraternity, there was lawyers for human rights involved. We agreed with them that they will help us to deal with the question of strengthening the department so that the evictions should be lessened as much as possible. But we further agreed that we will come back together so that we can formulate a collective approach in terms of how to tackle what you call the strategy to respond. Remember, the committee does not do the actual work itself. The committee is supposed to supervise the department, all departments concerned. So this is what needs to be done now. Remember that the sensation that we see in the media on this report is not the discovery of these issues. It's the vindication of those people who are raising this matter. Because Human Rights Watch is regarded as an independent, unbiased institution that is confirming the issues that we raised here. It is not the work of this committee to be cheerleaders of Human Rights Watch. It is not the work of this committee to be cheerleaders of the department's concerns. Nor is it the work of this department to formulate a strategy to stop evictions or abuse of farm workers and farm dwellers. It is our responsibility to hold accountable, working with the stakeholders, the department relevant on this matter, so that these things are no longer what they are claimed to be. And that is why it doesn't matter how many times we visit the farm to see for ourselves. It does not matter how many times we engage with AgriSA to ask them to prevail on their members. For instance, Tau was telling us in that particular meeting that this report talks about the housing conditions of farm workers. And the farmers are saying, why do we give that responsibility to the farmer? Why can't it be the partnership between the farmers and the government to provide housing and all basic needs of workers on the farms, like basic health, education, all these other things? Why can't the government play that particular role? Why are you placing that responsibility on the farmers alone? As a stakeholder to us, we think that the farmers can help us work with the other departments to get rid of these problems and these ills on the farms. I am not concluding the meeting. I'm just saying, it does not matter how much hype we have in the media on this matter. As long as the action is not taken on these issues, another Human Rights Watch in a different name will come up with another report next year.
and the media will have a frenzy about it, and nothing will be done. I think it is our responsibility, the committee, to pursue all the relevant departments. The Human Rights Watch, at the end, lists recommendations. They are specifically saying the Labor Department inspectors have no capacity to supervise what is happening on the farm, and they should be reinforced. We should go back to the Department of Labor and say, through our counterpart, Portfolio Committee of Labor, in Parliament, and say, what is it that can be done to reinforce the capacity of the inspectors so that the pesticides, so that the accidents, so that the working conditions, the adverse work, weather conditions on the farm that are affecting these workers can be dealt with effectively. We need to pursue this thing with our counterparts in the Portfolio Committee of Labor. Similarly, we need to do exactly the same thing, to go to our counterparts in agriculture, forestry, and fisheries, and raise these matters, because they themselves work with farmers and farm workers, like us. We don't limit ourselves to farm workers. We deal with farm dwellers as well, with their tenure rights and so on. So we have to engage them on this matter. This report goes beyond that. It says the president has commitment, international commitment, conventions and protocols regarding what you sell internationally must be under particular conditions. I hear that in China, the workers sleep in the factory and paid peanuts. And this report tends to gravitate towards that situation, to say in South Africa, well, we've got the best constitution in the world, but we allow this kind of situation to happen under our noses, and we need to do something about it. And therefore we ask the speaker to engage the president in that regard. I do not want to drag the president into this thing. I want to drag our counterparts in Parliament to pursue this. Ladies and gentlemen, ladies, you were late, and we decided simply because we know a little bit of English, we could read the report ourselves. And we then decided that having looked at some of the issues you are raising, having met with stakeholders in the field, we see some issues that resonate with what you have found. And simply because the South African community and society in general look at you as Human Rights Watch, as an independent body who vindicates some of these positions that have been raised here. What we are doing, we were debating as to whether to wait for you or whether to go ahead. And simply because we have read this report, we decided to wait and talk. Now, if you make a presentation now on the summary that you have given us, and if you give us the recommendations as we were talking about, your own recommendations, and you will be telling us nothing new, unless you will tell us something new that is a result of your report rather than the actual report itself. We have seen the responses from AgriSA. We have seen the responses from the Minister of Agriculture. We also have seen the Minister, others, commentators on your report. But we want to hear from you as people who commissioned the report and presented and launched it. What are the effects of your report? And where to from there, other than those things that are in your recommendation? Go ahead.
Thank you very much, and I deeply apologize for being late. We were stuck in a meeting with your counterparts in the Portfolio Committees for Agriculture and Labor. But I don't want to bore you with the details that you have already read in the summary and the recommendations. So instead, I would like to say that I am, and Sorry, my name is Caitlin Cordes. I'm a researcher with Human Rights Watch, and this is my colleague, Charlene Harry, who also works with...
Your name again, please?
Caitlin Cordes.
Cordes.
Yeah. So I work out of the New York office of Human Rights Watch, and Charlene works in the Johannesburg office of Human Rights Watch. And I was the primary researcher of this report, and I'm also the author of the report. So I've spent the last year working on basically nothing aside from this report. And I was very heartened to hear that, to hear you say that you do want to engage with your own department and your counterparts and other committees as well to address some of these issues. Because one of the things that I found very shocking and also disheartening was seeing that a lot of the findings of my research were so closely similar to the findings that the South African Human Rights Commission had found in 2008 and in 2003, and to see that despite the media attention around those reports and the recommendations that the Human Rights Commission had made at the time, it seems that not much has changed. And so your desire to look at the recommendations and to work proactively on it is very exciting to us, and we're glad to hear that. In terms of how to move forward, we did put a number of recommendations in the report. Some of them are broader and some of them are more specific. And one of the things that we were speaking about with some of your counterparts in the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture and Portfolio Committee on Labor was that thinking about the idea of an interdepartmental task force that focuses on farm workers and farm dwellers, because one of the problems that we saw when we were doing our research was that there are gaps in responsibility and accountability, and that no department has a mandate to address all of the problems that arise for farm workers and farm dwellers. And so it's quite easy for departments to refer us to other departments when we raise issues. And, you know, the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform has said that addressing the short-term shelter needs of farm dwellers is not the department's job, that we should be talking to the Department of Human Settlements. The Department of Human Settlements thinks that, you know, it's not their job, it should be another department. And so if it was possible to consider creating this interdepartmental task force to address it, then there would be one place where the departments could discuss together the best way to move forward, and also one place where civil society and farm workers themselves, as well as other stakeholders, farm owners, could come and talk about the issues and figure out the best way to move forward in a way that that responsibility is not shifted, but that we're able to really make effective change.
Thank you. I now open the opportunity to members to raise questions if they have any questions regarding the matters raised. But Ms. Collins, please, I need to know from you, part of your recommendation, or part of your, at the end of the summary report, the list of your recommendations, you are addressing the international consumer.
Yes.
We South African citizens are proud of South African wine, the South African fruit that is selling across the globe. When you are addressing the international consumer of South African products, your angle would be, whilst you are eating and enjoying the wine and fruit, the people who produce this are living under these conditions. What do you expect them to do?
I think that's a very important question because, you know, South African fruit and South African wine is highly regarded around the world, and we acknowledge, if you look at what our report says and also all of the statements that we put out, we do point to the fact that international consumer pressure can be important in affecting change, particularly when it comes to the international retailers and industry bodies. But we at no point try to discourage consumers from purchasing South African products, and that's not our goal at all. What we do suggest to international consumers is that they ask the people who are selling the products to them under what conditions these products were made, and that they request that products be made available for them to purchase that were grown and harvested and bottled and packed in ethical ways and that were subject to ethical audits, so that consumers can be confident that the wines that they're purchasing and the fruit that they're purchasing was produced under good conditions, and that they can continue to buy the fruit and the wine that so many people around the world love.
Thank you.
Chairperson, when I'm looking at the recommendation, this report goes into what I would call the contested issues in the country, the labor rights. And there has been a feeling from the West in particular that the South African laws, labor laws, are too rigid. Now, the call here is that we must apply those laws. How do we reconcile that? And what is very interesting to me, not just in relation to, I mean, you're calling for, you're putting a very strong case for the union in terms of exploitation. But how do you reconcile or even compare this with some of the exploitation which we've been talking about, which is affecting the union members, like in companies like Walmart and so on? Are you taking the same stand in promoting the labor rights when you deal with those companies, which I believe is correct to talk about the worker rights? That's where I'm coming from. Are you taking the same stance in relation to some of these companies like Walmart, who themselves are the abusers? Because what we've been hearing from coming from the international bodies, it's more about human rights abuses in the developing countries, very little about some of the big companies and what is happening even in the Western countries. That's my interest.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Sorry. Yes, sorry. Hi, thanks very much, Mr. Chairman. I have some questions about the methodology. It says in your report that you interacted with 260 people, of which 117 were current or former farm workers, and an additional 16 were farm dwellers. Can you tell us how many of the 117 were current farm owners? And can you also, I see in your report that you don't want to identify them publicly, but can you give us some indication of how you identified them? I would assume somebody had to put you in touch with the people that you wanted to speak to. And then there's a section in your introduction in which you say, however, not all farm workers interviewed by Human Rights Watch had encountered rights abuses. In a small number of cases, farms fully complied with the requirements of South African law. I mean, that's quite a loaded accusation. Your report states quite accurately there's over 100,000 farm workers in this province, and my estimates are that there's 4,000 farms producing grapes or fruit and wine. So, to extrapolate from your report, you're saying that only a small number of those 4,000 farms are not engaged in human rights abuses, which makes me want to ask the question, is this a representative sample? Is it random? Is it something from which you can extrapolate? My concern is that, first of all, I think it's important that we as a committee, and certainly that the national and provincial departments go forward and investigate these things. Much as there are things we have heard about before, you clearly have individual cases, and it's a huge, huge matter of concern. And I know for a fact that the provincial department, who you're going to be meeting with later, are very much committed to investigating further, because some of these things you've listed here are actual criminal acts. But I also think it's important not to taint an entire industry using an unrepresentative sample, which you haven't indicated how you came up with. Because I can argue that, you know, five people at this table drink too much, therefore all MPs are alcoholics. It's not really representative. So please, if you could detail how exactly you came up with the subjects, who introduced them to you and how, and then also tell us on what basis this can be extrapolated to the entire province, because I would argue that it would be quite an accusation and one that shouldn't be made or indeed taken lightly. And then lastly, I recognize your desire not to see people you've interviewed face consequences in the workplace. But I do think certainly the responsible thing to do and the right thing to do, particularly given that the reputation of an entire industry, one of the biggest farming industries in this country, rests on what has become a media sensation in this report. I think when you meet with the provincial department this afternoon, I would urge you to supply them with further information so that they can conduct investigations. I understand if you don't want to make it public, but certainly the government of this province and the national government, from Tina Jamat Peterson to Gugile Nkwinti, should be able, and Minister Olifant in Labour, should be able to conduct the necessary investigation and remedy the situation, because we don't want this to become, first of all, a lightning rod with which the South African farming industry is tainted internationally, but also a lightning rod that would taint the relationships between farmers and farm workers. Again, I'm really concerned about this phrase that only a small number of farms are compliant, because the information we have is that it's actually the vast majority. So, three things and a few comments. Thank you.
Very unfortunate example about the drinker. Can I give you a whip?
Chairperson, thank you very much. And my question is going to be first one. Have you had an opportunity of interacting with all the stakeholders when compiling this report? Because I think that is very important. You don't get a one-sided story and then run with it as if it's a true reflection. And there are a lot of organizations in South Africa that has engaged in what you have engaged in. And we want to know, have you done that? When it comes to your recommendations and the structures that you are representing here, I would like to understand from you exactly. Have you had an opportunity of sitting mostly with, I think part of my question is covered by my colleague here, mostly with the affected people, so that you are able to get from them, or you engage in some other methodology in getting your information that you've put here. But my worry is also the hype that was created by the launch of your report before coming to the committee or before engaging all the other relevant stakeholders. Thank you very much.
Yes. Will you move in? Oh, okay. Wait a minute when I'm here. Let me do something.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also just wanted to find out, I see here this report was based on views of over 216 people. And then there's this category of people mentioned in the report. If, when we get an answer or the breakdown, specifically if it's possible, how many of the people were current farm workers and then the migrant, the breakdown that was used in the report. If we can just get that, because for me it would also be a matter of interest just to see, you know, out of the 260, which people specifically and how many of these groups were interviewed. Thank you, Chair.
Chairperson, I've got just a short question. What informs this this research? Then, secondly, Chair, the issue of the, when looking at the report, it indicates that there is no requirement that the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform can be notified when evictions occur. I don't know whether that is true.
When
okay, yes, there's no requirement. Can you please clarify that one? Because I've got a different understanding on what is contained in this page. Thank you.
There are no further questions, Mr. Scottis. You can share if you choose.
Yes, I'll try to respond to all of your questions, and please remind me if there's something that I missed. I think I noted them all down, but some of the questions were multi-parted. So the first question, the question was, how do you reconcile the fact that South African labor laws are described by some people as too rigid, but on the other hand, we're arguing that the laws must be applied? And I would say that as an international human rights organization, we look at the South African government and all governments' human rights obligations and also what law they have enacted domestically. And so from an international human rights perspective, we do believe that a lot of South African labor legislation is very good and very strong and well-respected around the world. And I can't speak to the opinion of whether some of the labor legislation is too rigid, but I can say that given the labor legislation that has been passed, we do believe that it's crucial for the government to try to uphold its own labor legislation. And so it's not up to us to say whether the legislation needs to be revised in any ways, but given that there are laws that are meant to protect farm workers and other workers around the country, we believe that those laws should be upheld. And then a second question by the same person was about promoting labor rights with other companies like Walmart or looking at human rights abuses in Western countries. And I would point to the fact that this report only looks at labor conditions and human rights conditions in the agricultural sector in the Western Cape. But Human Rights Watch works in more than 90 countries in the world, and we look at a range of human rights issues in all of those 90 countries. And so we have in the recent past looked at agricultural labor practices in other countries. Just last year we released a report on child labor in the United States agricultural sector, where it is quite a big problem in the United States. We also released a report on foreign migrant farm workers in Kazakhstan who are producing tobacco. And in addition, I think the real question was about labor rights and freedom of association. And freedom of association is a fundamental human and labor right. It's recognized by the ILO, by the International Labor Organization, as one of the most fundamental labor rights that you can have. And we take that position that it's incredibly fundamental. And in fact, we did release in the past several years, I'm not quite sure which year, a report on European companies working in the United States that don't respect freedom of association in the United States. So it's quite an important issue for us, and it's something that we've looked at in a range of sectors and countries. The second question I had was about methodology. And then I think somebody else also asked about the breakdown of who I spoke to. And so as the report says, we spoke to over 260 people about this. 117 were farm workers or former farm workers. I believe the breakdown is about 85 to 90 were current farm workers, and the rest were former farm workers. In addition, there were 16 current farm dwellers who were not counted in the farm worker or former farm worker category. I spoke to 14 farmers and farmers association representatives, and the farmers association representatives provided the perspectives of a lot of their members. So I spoke with Agri West Cape and the Cape Agri Employers Organization. I also spoke to a few labor brokers, labor inspectors, third-party auditors who audit on export farms, civil society groups, trade unions, a number of other people as well. And if you look at the methodology section of the report, it's all laid out in the report, the primary categories of who I spoke to. And a question was asked of how I identified workers and other people. When I started doing the research last year, I reached out to as many people as I could. So I reached out to academics who had studied the issues before and to civil society groups, as well as to farmers associations and other groups as well, and asked them to help me to find people that I could interview for this. And so I ended up finding my interviewees in a number of ways. I found them through spending time in farming communities and approaching people. I found them through other contacts who had contacts in farming communities who were willing to speak to me. I found them, some of them through civil society groups, some of them through trade unions. The Department of Agriculture Western Cape took me around for a day and a half to speak to people with them as well. So I explored as many options as I could for setting up interviews. And I do want to point out that because farm workers are often in such a vulnerable and precarious position, some of them were afraid to even talk to me. So there were workers who had agreed to speak to me and then decided not to, or workers who simply said that they couldn't speak to me for fear of what would happen to them if they did. And there's a question about extrapolating from the report, and is this a representative sample? And the research that we do is not quantitative research, and we don't claim that it is. It's qualitative research. We spoke to as many people as we could in the amount of time that we had, and for Human Rights Watch, it's actually quite a large number of people that we spoke to, but it's not quantitative. And so in the report, I tried to be quite careful about explaining the abuses that I found and relating them to the research that I did. So when I say that, on a small number of farms fully comply with all legislation, I believe that the extra line says something about in a small number of the farms where we did research or that I conducted interviews around or something like that, the farms only fully complied with legislation. And so in terms of being able to extrapolate it, I take the point that there are a lot of farms in the Western Cape, and this is a very, very small percentage of that. And so we don't claim that it's a quantitative research. What I can say is that aside from speaking to these workers, some of the other people that I spoke to do represent broader constituencies around which I was able to gauge how relevant some of the stories were that were being told to me. So the report doesn't document, the report doesn't document the secondhand stories, but being able to speak, for example, to third-party auditors who have conducted audits on a number of farms and who could tell me about the problems that they see on the farms that they audit was very helpful to me in understanding the extent to which some of these problems occur. In addition, we did make an effort to go to a number of places in the Western Cape, so I believe that we did research in about 10 different areas of the Western Cape, and that was to ensure that we weren't finding simply one pocket of problems and to make sure that we could talk to people, to workers and other stakeholders in a number of places. So, we were around Stellenbosch and Powell and Frontis, but also up in Citrusdal and Friedendahl, out to Ladysmith and Bonneville and a series in Cobo. So there are a number of places that we did the research as well. In terms of providing more information on the specific funds that we did research on, I do realize that this is a problem, and I know when I was doing my research, after speaking to, particularly when I was speaking to industry bodies and farmers associations, I was often told that people are sick of reports that provide these allegations without giving the names of actual farms. And I was told that people high up in these organizations, if I gave them the name of a specific farm where I found allegations, would go themselves to make sure that there weren't any problems. And I appreciate that offer, and I completely recognize the concerns that people have about this. But when we started the research, we were aware of the vulnerable positions that a lot of farm workers are in, and as I said before, the fact that a lot of farm workers were afraid to even speak to us. And so we took the decision that we were not going to name farms because of the possible negative repercussions that could accrue to workers who spoke to us, and that we wouldn't use the real names of workers also. So if you look at the report, you'll see that they're all pseudonyms of the workers. But having said that, we also, you know, told each of the people that we spoke to that their interviews were confidential, which is one of the reasons why most of these people agreed to speak to us. Having said that, I do think one way to move forward would be to talk to some other farm worker representatives who could possibly bring specific cases forward. They have their own separate agreements with people that I interviewed. They don't have the same confidentiality requirements. And so I will make a case to civil society groups or unions or legal services representatives, anyone who is working with communities where I did my research, to try to figure out some way to bring these specific cases forward, because I do think it is really important to do that. But also another issue is that I think, it's good that people are offering to go out to the farms to address specific issues, but as has been pointed out to me, I didn't go to most farms, and I don't know if it, I think a more comprehensive and sustainable way to move forward is ensuring that there are efforts in place to address all of the problems on farms, and not the ones that I simply happened to find when I came here to do the research. And I think that there are efforts that have been made by, obviously by government and then also by private industry to try to improve conditions on farms. And I think giving more, putting more energy into those ways of ensuring comprehensive and sustainable change would be also a good way forward. And another question was, have I engaged with all stakeholders? So as I said, I don't want to repeat myself, but I did speak with a number of people when I was doing the research, including government representatives, industry bodies, private actors. I thank you very much for the opportunity to speak to you today. We did try to set up a number of meetings with different committees and government departments before this research, before the report was released yesterday. And we had a very difficult time doing that. And so this is, the first time that we were able to meet with you. There were several government departments that we contacted on both. I was here in November and December, and also in February and March, and we contacted government departments at each of those times to try to arrange meetings, and had a very difficult time. So a lot of the interviews that I did do with government employees were simply interviews that I got after calling up one person, 20 times and tracking them down, but it was very hard to get, we did as much as we could to reach out to all of the stakeholders before the report was released, and we look forward to continued engagement in the future. And I was asked about the breakdown of interviewees. I already explained the breakdown between workers and owners and other stakeholders. I'm not sure if there was a more specific question about the breakdown of workers. So if somebody does have a more specific question about that, please let me know, and I'm happy to answer it. And then finally...
Excuse me, Ms. Cottis, this last point you were making.
Is it not possible just, if it is just a list of those files on which you base your generalized finding, even if you don't give us the names of people, just a list of the files?
No.
So that we can visit them and ascertain ourselves with those conditions there.
Unfortunately, we can't provide a list because of the reasons why that I explained, that we had told all of the workers that the interviews would be confidential. Some of the stories that were told are easily traced to the worker if the farm is identified. And also, you know, in some ways, I think the best way to move forward would be to try to talk to other groups that could identify a list of farms where there are poor conditions, where this committee or any other inspectors could move forward, because I'm sure that would be very easy to set up, and that would be a great way to move forward in addressing problems on farms.
Puts us in a very difficult situation, because as the committee, whenever a matter is reported to us, we need to go and verify so that we can act on this via the department's concern. Now, if we don't have any place where we can point at as an example of this kind of abuse, we may not have an opportunity to put weight on this, on the finding, because there's no place to look. That's the difficulty we're facing ourselves. I'm sure yourselves, in any form of research, the people who read reports of research, they need to know whether another person using your methodology would come to the same conclusion. And if we are unable to check whether the farms you looked at can show the results that you found, in what way can we assess it that your findings are representative of what is taking place?
So I have one quick statement, but then I'll pass it over to my colleague, Sipho Mapapi, who is the director of the South Africa Office for Human Rights Watch, who can answer it more fully. But I do want to point out that the problems that are documented in the report are not new problems. And I think, as I said, when I first arrived here, one of the things that I found so shocking was that a lot of them are very similar to the findings of the South African Human Rights Commission in 2008. And so I think that the fact that there have been, you know, and aside from the Human Rights Commission, there have been a number of other reports that have been released as well. And so what we're trying to point to is simply the conditions on farms that exist and not necessarily the conditions that exist on the specific farms that we did research on. But my colleague, Sipho, will address the question even further.
Thanks. I mean, I think along those lines, as Caitlin said, this parliament itself has had many hearings by farm workers and farm worker organizations. There's the Human Rights Commission report. We were just sitting with the Labour Portfolio Committee reps, and they were telling us about their own raids that they have ordered and their own stories that have been put forward to them. And so I think, in a way, what would be useful as an approach for Parliament is to take an approach that understands that what this report points to is a larger systemic problem that needs to be investigated further, but that we already have enough evidence, and the Human Rights Watch report really just adds to the chorus of voices which are pointing to the fact that there are problems that need to be resolved, and farm workers in this country, in this province, which is supposed to be one of the better provinces, are facing huge challenges. And I think an approach like that, I think, would take the matters further. I mean, there's been summits that have been organized by departments, of rural development and others, including a range of stakeholders, which, where some of these issues, have come forward. And so perhaps it would be useful to look at,
what role can this portfolio committee play in making sure that we actually can address the systemic problems that are being pointed out to, by some of these reports that have actually been tabled to this parliament. And as Caitlin said, there are many organizations of farm workers that would be able to be ready tomorrow to bring some very specific cases that this parliament, this portfolio committee could take forward if that was the interest.
You are late. We have dealt with that part of this. You see, we're not putting you in the dock. We're not questioning your findings. What we're trying to do is to consolidate what we already know in order to hold the relevant departments to account on their failure to respond to this. We can't accuse you of fabricating the story. What we're trying to do is to find a way which will assist us to verify your findings. That's all. Whether you have confidentiality issues with the people you interviewed, at least if we can have the site, not the individuals, not the people, just the site, so that we can go there. Your director is correct that you have been spoken to other people. But we have our own responsibility as a committee to come to an understanding of the issues on the table. You were not here, Director, when we were saying we've held meetings with stakeholders. That is why our whip here was asking whether you did meet with those stakeholders. And we have particular agreements with them in terms of how to pursue this matter. So this report comes in the middle of that particular process. AgriSA and us have an understanding that we need to pursue an understanding of the farm workers' conditions on the farm. We also have to pursue a partnership between the farmers and government so that the housing conditions of the farm workers should be improved. We have agreed with AgriSA and TAU that all the conditions as explained by NGOs and farm workers, reps and unions must be pursued. What we want to do, if we were to use your report as an additional evidence to the information given to us, at least we have to be confident that it is authentic. That's why we ask the question. We're not questioning the validity of the information. We want to check whether we can go and verify. This department, we are oversighting as the portfolio committee. There's a number of pieces of land that have been given to individual groups and families, which we have visited. Whenever a report is given to us, we go and have a look for ourselves so that we can verify whether this is indeed true or not. That's the basis in which we are asking this question. If you have any last comments, we would want to end this part of questions so that we can get to the deliberations of the committee as to how we take the process forward.
Sure. Well, I'll ask my colleague, Sipo, if she has any particular responses to that. But I just wanted to answer the last question that I hadn't been able to answer yet that you had posed about what informs this research and a clarification question about whether there is a requirement to notify the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform when evictions occur. And so the report was informed by the research that we did, the interviews with over 260 people, and then also we also did background research with other reports to get a bigger understanding of the issues and looked at the laws and other things. In terms of the requirement to notify the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform when evictions occur, our understanding, what we have been told, is that there clearly is a requirement to notify the department when a farmer begins the legal eviction process and applies to the court for a court order. And so the department will always receive notification at that point. However, there's no requirement to notify the department when an eviction actually occurs through the legal process or through an illegal process. And so there's no way of knowing how many of the court orders that were issued actually resulted in an eviction or what's happening to people. And so that's what we meant in the report when we say that there's no requirement to say when an eviction occurs. And as you'll see, one of the recommendations in our report is simply we're asking the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform or other departments in collaboration to track the number of farm dweller evictions, because in the report it kept coming up as something that, you know, is a very important issue for a number of stakeholders. It can be an emotional issue for stakeholders on all sides of the debate, on the farm worker side and the farmer side. But no one at this point knows how many evictions are continuing to occur. I can tell you that I spoke to workers who were facing eviction, and I spoke to people who had been forced off the farm, but because it wasn't a quantitative research study, we can't say with any confidence how many evictions are continuing to occur in the Western Cape and other places. And so I think that's something that would be very important to remedy in thinking through how the government and other stakeholders address the problem of evictions, just simply create a system that tracks evictions in the first place. But I'll pass it over to Sipo in case she has anything else to add.
No, thank you, Chair. I don't have anything to add. I just did want to apologize for my lateness. The Department of Agriculture helped me.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your coming to talk to us about these matters. Director, I believe you live in Joburg.
Yes, I live here.
Oh, so you're not going to go to the city?
No, I'm...
All right.
Very much.
No, fine. We would want to have further engagement with you. We particularly are interested in your methodology. Like I said, I explained why. And we would want to pursue that with you later. For now, I think that's okay. We will deliberate among ourselves how to take the process forward. And we'll let you know. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We will remain and talk behind your backs when you go.
That's what we noticed. Thank you, Victor. But thank you again. We really appreciate the opportunity.
Director was not here when I was telling your colleagues about the reputation of the South African wine, and I'm sure you love it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. my deputy minister must indicate if he would like me to talk on behalf of the department. I can respond on behalf of the province. What I will say haven't been discussed with our top management, but I would be happy to respond if that's okay with my minister, my DM. Sure.
incident in Mpumalanga when somebody volunteered to speak to us and he was told not to speak to us. You are in Parliament, you are not, we are not in Mpumalanga or somewhere else. Talk to us, please.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, colleagues. Really what I'm best in a position to talk to would be the recommendations to the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform. And I note that there's eight, I've identified eight recommendations here which speak specifically to our department. But before I do that, let me say that, you know, notwithstanding what has been said, I wouldn't want to question the methodology or the findings. I can't comment to what extent these findings can be extrapolated, but I think, and personal opinion, even if these findings aren't extrapolated and, or can't be extrapolated to the whole wine and deciduous fruit industry in the Western Cape, the fact that these such conditions and such stories exist on any of the farms is unacceptable and obviously requires action, not just from our department, but from all spheres of government together. So I, from my side, I'm happy to accept these findings. I think they do represent something of the reality without, as I say, I can't comment whether they can be extrapolated. But if I can, may go then directly to the recommendations which talk to our department. The first recommendation is that the department take immediate action to ensure the protection of farm dwellers' rights under existing law, including by excuse me, sir, prioritizing work by department employees to support persons facing eviction from farms. Honorable Chair, I think this is a recommendation that the department is already implementing. Firstly, through the Land Rights Management Facility, which both you and the Deputy Minister referred to in our earlier discussions, which provides mediation services as well as legal representation, quality legal representation to persons, vulnerable farm workers and farm dwellers facing eviction. Obviously, there our first prize would always be to attempt either directly by the officials of the department or through the facility to mediate a settlement which does not involve litigation. But where litigation is unavoidable, we are confident that we can fulfill our obligation as per court precedence to provide quality legal representation. There can be no denying that legal evictions do continue, but we have certainly seen a decline in the number of evictions confirmed by the Land Claims Court in the last 2 years where this facility has been in operation. And as you note, the Land Rights Management Facility is presently managed by Cheadle Thompson Haysom. Their contract has recently been extended for a period of 18 months. And to go to the second point, the second recommendation, for the department to hire more personnel to focus on eviction cases. I think it's notable that the Land Rights Management Facility contract was extended for a limited period because it is exactly the intention of the department to bring that or to create an in-house facility to provide these services, so it would not have to, we do not want it to be outsourced longer than in the short term. The new structure of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform does make provision for more personnel to be employed to focus on tenure insecurity and eviction cases in particular. The third bullet is the recommendation that there should be a system to track evictions from farms, which should include all legal evictions that occur under procedures established by the Extension of Security of Tenure Act or the Prevention of Illegal Eviction from an Unlawful Occupation of Land Act. And this system should also incorporate all data collected by the department on real or threatened evictions. The department already has a system in place to track legal evictions. We attempt as far as possible to also track illegal evictions, but we can only do so with support from all other role players, civil society, trade unions, and impossible for me to give the committee a guarantee to say that there aren't any illegal or that there are no illegal evictions or illegal evictions that we are not aware of. But certainly we strive to monitor and track all evictions from farms. The presenter from Human Rights Watch, Catherine, the American lady, I think she was correct when she, in response to her question, stated that in the case of legal applications for evictions, there is an obligation on the applicants to inform both our department as well as the local authority. So that enables us to track all proceedings in court. Our officials are obliged to present, as you know, let the committee know, probation reports in all cases. And yes, there's certainly an obligation on them to actually track when such evictions, where orders are granted and confirmed by the Land Claims Court, are actually effected. The fourth bullet, the recommendation, which is the recommendation that the department affirm the rights of children over the age of 18 who are not working on a farm yet living with working family members. Honorable Chair, I think this refers to proposals in the Land Tenure Security Bill. I myself participated in consultations with these with people on farms, and there was a concern raised by a number of organizations and role players that the proposed bill extended protection from that under ESTA. ESTA does not dependence on people who live on farms and whose residential right derives purely from their labor contract. Under the present legislation, such dependents do not have the same status under the Act. The Land Tenure Security Bill, which was put forward for consultation, proposed extending the definition of those protected by the Act to also include dependents and also include children or even nephews and nieces over the age of 18 who are still at school. However, there was a strong feeling, and I think that is what is coming out in this recommendation, that similar protection should be offered to children over the age of 18 who might not be at school. So, in fact, Chair, I think this is a recommendation which talks to the proposed Land Tenure Security Bill. If I can then move, Chair, to the recommendations, which the next section on page 6, which are recommendations to our to the Department of Labor, our departments, as well as the Department of Agriculture and the Department of Human Settlement. First, to develop in collaboration and in consultation with farmers, farm workers, and industry representatives a policy that addresses poor housing conditions on farms, without creating a disincentive for farmers to provide farm worker housing. Chair, certainly I can say on behalf of the department that we support that, and we are already engaged in consultation with all of these groups as well as other departments, in particular Department of Human Settlements, both at national and provincial level. But also to add that the proposal in the Land Tenure Security Bill, talking to the establishment of agri-villages, was an attempt to address the question of poor housing and the demand, both from organized labor as well as many farmer associations, that the right of residence should be separated from the right of labor. the point that you made, Chair, argued by farm organizations, that they should not be responsible for provision of housing. So those proposals in the Land Tenure Security Bill was an attempt to do just that. The sixth bullet calls on our department to collaborate on addressing farm dwelling evictions at the national, provincial, and local level. Government departments should work more closely on the issue, including how to provide for the short-term needs of those evicted. We'd certainly support that, but more so to say that these consultations at a local level must certainly involve local governments and municipalities, who I think are in best position in a short time to address those needs. If I may say, we saw, for example, 3 years ago when there were the terrible racist and xenophobic attacks in our country, how in many cases local government and municipalities were able to respond quickly to those needs for temporary housing. And then, Chair, finally, the last two recommendations that talk to our department are those further down on page 6, which talk to national government and municipalities that cover rural areas. The first recommendation, to ensure that farm worker and farm dwellers are included in government housing plans. We certainly support that. And as our comprehensive rural development program is rolled out in the rural nodes, we attempt as the department to address the needs for tenure security through acquisition of strategically located land for establishment of agri-villages. And I think the recommendation is correct in that it is not us alone, and it's not to move responsibility. We need to be prime movers and prime players, but we can only do it together with all other departments, not just at national government and municipalities, but also our colleagues in provincial government. And finally, the recommendation to devise actionable plans to address the short-term shelter needs of evicted farm dwellers and farm workers. I think I've supported that in talking to the bullet point above. I would stop there, Chair. Obviously, my deputy minister will add or correct me. Thank you.
Chairperson, just one concern, and maybe a proposal to reinforce what you said at the beginning. I think when we deal with these issues, we need a holistic approach. Why a selective approach to the wine farms? That remains to me a fundamental question, because the issue of abuse and disrespect of labor rights in the farm is in all the farms. Why select on the wine farms? That bothers me. I would have argued that the abuse which you have referred to, the reports we have been receiving, they talk about the whole industry of the agriculture, that there's a problem in terms of the labor. But the study decides to be selective. For what reason, I don't know. And the study has disregarded some of the initiatives which have been taken to respond to some of the issues. For instance, Barry refers to the Legal Services Project, which was dealing with the massive eviction under Chairman Thompson, in a board chaired by the late Professor Asma. And if you look into that report, a lot of these issues, which were being mediated and so on and so on, very successful story. To me, then, I would have expected that these researchers, if they are doing the real research, approach even the department to ask them, what have you done in relation to these issues? And then they also get that particular perspective. And it seems as if it's not existing. That's fine, but all that report does confirms all what we know. But unfortunately, it becomes selective on the wine farm. think what we must do, having raised all the concerns, you need to call all the departments who are responsible to say what work are they doing in relation to these areas, if there's any work being done. Just to come and give full reports. And I think you're correct to say you also have your counterpart, other departments. Labor, agriculture, you mentioned them all. How do you facilitate from your side with your counterpart that we look into these issues? Or we evaluate the programs which are already there, because there are programs that are dealing with all these issues. And then we say, is there enough progress? How do we reinforce that and take it forward? Not concentrating on the wine farm, on the wine farms. Talking about the country national, on all the farms. Now that would be my proposal. And I would have expected an international organization before it comes with conclusions and give us certain experiences and cases on how these things are also being handled in other countries, because this is an international research, so that we're able, in terms of what they propose must be implemented, to say what is the best practice in other countries. You have in the United States a lot of Mexicans who are faced with the same situation in the farms. And the question is, what are the experiences there? Would love the research to also inform us about those experiences, because they are operating at an international level. And so that is the process which we are trying to define at the beginning. Maybe we must just hone on it. And I still want to emphasize, why pick up the wine farms?
Trying to salvage the situation. But
And then left with the question of what are they asking us to do, really, if they are not presenting us with the sites where we can go and fulfill what they want us to do, to act upon their findings. It becomes one of those fruitless exercises that we sit, deliberate on issues, and it just becomes a talk show. If we are to make a difference, we should be given the information that we can act upon so that we make a difference to our people. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I think the most issues that are in your report are the issues that we know as we had your public hearing before. Then secondly, when looking at the report, it touches many departments, human settlement, agriculture, labor, rural development, local government, because it also speaks about service delivery issues. But when they were presenting and they indicated that they met the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture and Labor, because I thought that maybe if we can have the joint meeting with those other committees, so that at the end of the day we consider this recommendation together with the departments and see which ones can be implementable, so that at the end of the day, as the committee, we check whether the department are able to implement those resolutions. While on the other side, I think we have to also consider that report that we are having, the report of the public hearings, and do the oversight ourselves. Thank you, Chair.
That collectively we approach governments to create a coordinated plan to deal with this matter. There is no contradiction to the fact that the stakeholders that we have interacted with on this matter, who have committed themselves to helping us get rid of these ills on the farms, should be pursued. Given that, then we conclude in this meeting that we'll take this process forward in that particular manner. Is there any other additional matter? Agreed? Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Yeah. Thank you.
devamlı dinlenmeyle.